Good morning. It is 9 o'clock, July 21st. I'll call the meeting to order. We do have a bit of a modified council this morning. Gary Neffendorf is at a conflicting meeting. We'll be here in about 30 minutes. Tony Klein is on vacation that was scheduled. We have an invocation, Pastor Michael Bell, and followed by pledges, if you will all. Michael Bell, if you're here. There we are.
Well, it's great to be here with you all today. Isn't it blessed to be in Fredericksburg? Amen. All right, I'm not going to preach today. I just want to read one passage from Psalm 33, verse 11 and 12. It says, "The counsel of the Lord stands forever, the plans of his heart to all generations. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." Let's pray together. Lord, it's such a blessing to be in this great city of Fredericksburg. Lord, I pray your blessing upon this meeting. Lord, I thank you that you've given us those who are leaders in this community, especially our mayor, council members, city officials, our staff, first responders, Lord, all who are responsible for the welfare of this city. I pray a prayer of blessing upon them today, Lord, as we make decisions, as things are brought forward. Lord, we just ask for wisdom and guidance, and that there would be unity in this place. And also, Lord, we lift up those who are on the other side of this flood, these waters that really cause a lot of destruction. Lord, there's some decisions to be made. Lord, we thank you for our neighbors in Kerrville and Comfort and the surrounding areas. I pray, Lord, that you would help provide peace and comfort and provision where they need it. And Lord, we do all of this in the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Where is Annette when we need her?
She just joined the bowling league.
All right. Employee recognition, we want to welcome Barbara Quirk, our new city attorney. Welcome to Fredericksburg. Is there anything that you would like to say?
No, I'm so happy to be here.
A lawyer that doesn't say much.
Give me time.
Welcome. Welcome aboard. Council comments, I guess we'll start from the right this time.
Good morning. Thank you to Ashley and everybody, first responders, all of the departments. We read the department head update this morning, and literally every department in the city helped with flood recovery. So thanks to all of those who did that. On the 19th of June, I attended the Juneteenth ceremony at the Christian Methodist Episcopal Church. On the 20th, I volunteered at the Peach Jamboree. Congratulations to Stonewall Chamber. On the 23rd, I had a CVB board meeting, and of course, we had a wonderful July 4th parade.
I agree with Todd and congratulate the all the first responders and everybody that volunteered and helped out with the relief effort. Thank you so much. And that's all I have today.
Okay, thank you. I also attended the Juneteenth commemoration as well. Dr. Paul is wanting to let everyone know that they plan to hold services there probably once a quarter, so please look for that. Support them. We have started our budget sessions, so if you are interested, and please attend those. It surprises me how few people actually show up for that, but please do. We also held a joint session with our commissioners for jointly funded initiatives such as first responders. I want to echo the comments here earlier. With the flood response, the volunteers, the professional, the first responders, staff, especially citizens that heeded all of this, really made it the best outcome possible in a difficult situation. I also want to personally thank our communication director, Sean, for keeping me apprised and giving me some talking points as well, so thank you for that. So we'll move from there into consent agenda. We have a couple of different issues. Item 6A, approval of the minutes for June 15th and June 16th, along with approval of the revised interlocking agreement with the LCRA for radio services and equipment. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve consent agendas presented.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? 6A and 6B pass. As I mentioned, we do have a little bit of a schedule conflicts this morning. Mr. Scott Ferrer, Chief Appraiser, is here with us. We do have item 8A we'll talk about shortly, but I know he has to exit for a meeting. So with permission, do you want to speak? And then that gives you latitude if you have to exit.
Good morning, Council.
Morning.
Earlier this year, back in February, Crystal Chasseau came to my office and said that after 40-plus years, she was looking to move out of doing the delinquent tax collections for the taxing units of Gillespie County. Since that time, we have gone through a process. She had a firm that she would like to follow her, that she would work with and follow her. I went through a process to vet firms. There's three big firms in the state of Texas. And through the process, two of them submitted requests for qualifications to me. I went through a process that I believe is in the letter I believe you have. So I'm not going to go through that whole letter. I will tell you, I don't know a sane chief appraiser that wants to stir up conflict. I didn't intend to stir up conflict. I figured the easy choice would be to go with the firm that Crystal wanted. Through the process, by the end of the process, I determined that the best firm for the appraisal district to work with, the best firm for the taxing units long-term is Linebarger & Associates. So that is not the firm that Crystal Chasseau recommended. I'm going to keep it short and sweet for you. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but that is based on the process that I went through. I believe Linebarger is the firm that's best for the appraisal district and the taxing units long term.
Scott, a couple questions. This is a services-based thing. It's not a fixed quote pricing. Was pricing an issue? Was it skill set? Product deliverables, what was the tipping point for you?
Delinquent tax firms are paid by the people who owe the delinquent taxes. There is no cost to the city. There's no cost to the appraisal district. In essence, all of the costs are passed through to the person who didn't pay their taxes timely. So that cost is not an issue here. Part of the proposal, there was a benefit. You know, there's benefits both ways. Part of the proposal, there was a benefit by one of the delinquent tax firms that they would pay the district's non-litigation legal fees each year. The other firm has, in the end, said they would match that. The tipping point was through the process and my conversations with other assessors. The assessors were county tax assessor collectors or chief appraisers who are assessors. And then at the end, really the biggest tipping point was the face-to-face, the interview across the table, myself, my three managers with the firms. That was the biggest tipping point to me.
And has the school made a decision yet at this point?
Yes. This is the sixth meeting I've been to.
Okay.
My request to each taxing unit, I'll be happy to answer the question, but my request to each taxing unit is you are one vote. Everybody gets one vote. The appraisal district gets one vote. That's nine votes. Everybody should take their vote based on what they believe.
Yep.
Currently, we've had six meetings. One got punted. They didn't make a decision. They'll make the decision in August. And the other five meetings, it has been three votes to Purdue and two votes to Linebarger.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, Scott, you're welcome to stay as long as you like, and thank you. Moving to item 7A, request Z2610 by County Express Food Mart. I believe we have a presentation by the applicant, then staff, and then a public hearing.
Yes, sir.
We have an applicant. Please come on up.
Good morning, Council. Today, I just want to talk about the remodel that we're doing at our convenience store located on 816 North Milam Street. What we are planning to do is do an extension of the existing building of up to 450 square feet. Currently, the building is 1,800 square feet, and we're just trying to extend it 450 more, which brings it up to a total of 2,250 square feet, which is like the maximum square feet you can have in a C1 zone. And we're also doing planning on adding the two fuel pumps, and that'll be part of the remodel as well. And I just wanted to touch on mostly the feedbacks that we received from the PNZ and how we upgraded those as well. Based on the PNZ, we noticed that we were originally going to do three pumps, but we noticed that everyone was having problems with the traffic flow and everything. So we decided to bring it down to two pumps. And what we noticed with our architectural engineer is we see more better traffic, better parking space, better ability of the fuel truck to pull in, and also the addition of more parking spots for more customers that can that park. And originally they were having problems with the parking spots as well, that there was two less parking spots. So we found room reducing those two pumps and adding two additional more parking spots. And they also recommended for the canopies to be backlit, the backlit of the canopy to be lowered or be turned off completely so it doesn't bother any neighbors. And also the audio on the pumps, which is like the advertisements on the pumps, to be completely turned off. So we agreed on that as well. And they also recommended the hours of operation to be 6 to 10, so we agreed on that as well. And if y'all have any other questions, I can answer those as well.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you, sir. Cliff?
Yes, thank you, Mayor, and good morning to everyone. And I'll follow up on the applicant's presentation, kind of give you a background of why we're here. So the applicant in the underlying C1 zoning district, convenience stores with accessory fuel pumps and stations require a conditional use permit. The applicant came before us in the PNZ for a conditional use permit approval, site plan approval, and entry corridor approval. Originally, the proposal was for an expansion of the convenience store only. He was going to add roughly 450 square feet to the existing 1,800 square foot building. And because the use of the convenience store was a legal non-conforming use and it was expanding beyond 25%, he would have to come back for a conditional use for the expansion of a legal non-conforming use. He then introduced the addition of the fuel pumps, which clearly further intensified the use, which then did require the conditional use permit for the new use of the convenience store with the accessory pumps. So during the process of going in front of PNZ, as the applicant touched on, there were several factors that were looked at, which included entry to the site, it included the number of parking spaces, and he did touch on that there were six spaces being proposed as part of the revised plan that came before them. The new building of 2,250 square feet would require roughly eight spaces at the 1 per 300 ratio. So he has addressed that. One of the discussions and conditions was that staff would ensure that the parking requirements are met as part of our administrative review. So long story short, site plan approval, entry corridor approval has already been completed as part by the PNZ as part of that review and process. But today we need the formal conditional use permit approving the use itself for the new for the expanding convenience store with the accessory pumps that will now be there. The conditions that were identified in the ordinance are in your ordinance as well. And as the applicant had touched on, there were hours of operation restrictions. It was reduced to the number of pumps. the backlit requirement was brought up. You couldn't have the audio and visual associated with pumps because of its proximity to the neighboring properties. So based upon that, the Planning and Zoning Commission did make a recommendation of approval by a 7-0 vote, and it is coming before you today for the required public hearing and formal action on that recommendation. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Gentlemen. I do have Amelia Bertrand's letter here, and I have read it. There's a couple of things that she points out here concerning hazardous materials, soil contamination, underground tank leaks, things of that nature. P&Z 7-0, was this discussed at all at length? Is there any? She has concerns, and I just want to validate. Do we feel comfortable?
Yeah, these are discussions that come up, and you see it a lot with fuel stations because of the underground tanks and so forth, and the concern. From a staff standpoint, that's really not our cup of tea, and we're not the experts, and there's a higher power, so to speak. So what was related to the Planning and Zoning Commission is that as part of the administrative review, we would require that all local and state requirements are met to address the placement of the tanks in the property to ensure that there are no environmental hazards with the new addition of the tanks.
And there were tanks there previously, years past, correct?
There were, and I would suspect the site got a clean bill of health, so to speak, when you bought it as part of your phase one and phase two environmentals. At any time you have a transfer of ownership, you're going to be required to have that. So based upon that, I would suspect there was no environmental contamination at the site.
Any questions, gentlemen? Amelia, we do have your speaker form. If she's out there, she's welcome to. Ms. Bertrand, you're welcome to speak. Well, we've read your letter, if you want to add to it.
So basically, this was my speech, and my husband said, "Oh, well, you can actually just print it out and give it to him." So basically, this is really the big things are really the new research. So research has recently come out in 2026 that wasn't there before. So I just want to make sure that we are keeping our children of Fredericksburg in mind. There could be home daycares in that vicinity. There could be many things that are being missed. I didn't realize originally that it was just going to be a convenience store. The convenience store is fine. It's been there. It's a part of the neighborhood. And actually, there's a lot of people who are going to and from who stop at that convenience store because they're able to. Commercial vehicles, lots of City of Fredericksburg vehicles. I'm currently staying at home with that screeching child. And really, I see them park inside because they have that opportunity. With the new rules on 965, that's going to be closed off. There's going to only be one way in and out. And so that means it's hard. And I know because we have Airbnbs around us. And when they come on the weekend, I have a hard time pulling out onto Milam because their cars are blocking my view. It's really dangerous. And so, again, just those are some big points that I want us to make sure that we're ready to accept and that we've done the research to really understand that, as well as, you know, how that's going to affect our homeowners when it comes to the implications of having gas tanks and how that can affect things like the groundwater and things for the neighborhood surrounding. So I just am not sure if a commercial gas station is appropriate at that site. I would much rather have the larger convenience store with the additional facilities, because that's what people are stopping there for now. That's what people are accustomed to. But again, that doesn't help the parking. And that's just how TxDOT is really saying that it needs to happen, that one point of ingress and regress. So I'm not sure exactly how that goes, but really, I just want to make sure that we are taking our due diligence to ensure that our community and our neighborhoods are, one, informed. With the new research, the 300 feet is a difference from the 200. And they're saying that that's the greatest risk for children under age 15. And there's a lot of kids. As a matter of fact, to the back, as I look across my street, there's no fence between those homes and the alleyway that lead right up to where the gas station's going to be. And there are two children under five who they are out there all the time running around. So just those types of things really need to be taken into consideration before we say, yes, let's go ahead and do it. And how does that affect our property values? And what are we going to do next? I don't know if that helps, but really my request is obviously I'm not in favor of it. I've already told my husband we're going to have to figure out where to move to because the research is there. The research wasn't there before. Published in April 1st of 2026, that research is showing it, and other cities are now questioning and saying, hey, let's take a pause on this. Let's not push the gas too fast because there are implications to the people in our community.
Okay. Thank you very much. Bradley Bertrand.
Do we need to start the clock? Okay. thank you, and I appreciate y'all taking the time to let us vent our concerns and just hear us out on some of the issues that we have. In addition to my wife's comments about health concerns, as part of this process, we've heard it mentioned that the UDC is being amended, is in process of being amended across the town. And one thing that we're asking is for the city to really investigate, is it really appropriate for gas stations to go into residential neighborhoods, not for just the nuisance items, such as lighting, noise, and traffic, also for the health issues that my wife did point out. As Cliff mentioned earlier, this property does not need a CUP to proceed with their development if they are not doing the gas pumps. So what we're asking for is for the city to take some time to investigate whether or not it's appropriate for gas stations to be in residential neighborhoods, take a pause, but a denial would actually allow them to proceed with the development minus the gas pumps. Secondly, I do want to raise a little bit of a concern about how this process was submitted. In our last P&Z meeting, the applicant submitted an entirely new site plan just a few hours before the meeting, and that's what was voted on. There was no public posting of that site plan, no time to review that plan that was posted. And, somebody that's not used to reading plans had no idea how to read what was being presented and give an educated and informed decision. I'm trained in that, so I was able to read it very quickly and respond to it. But I want to express extreme concern over a plan not being publicly posted before it was voted on. There was a good 5 or 10 minute debate from the Planning and Zoning Commission whether or not the new plan should even be considered since it had not been posted. And ultimately, the decision was to move forward with voting on it due to the concerns over a rejected application not being able to be resubmitted for a year due to new recent legislation passed by the city. So I do want to express concern that process was convoluted and, in my opinion, not really above board. So I don't know how a resubmittal goes when an application has been tabled like this, if there's a timeline for resubmission of plans, but it was an entirely new site plan. And as a professional, I'm a licensed architect. I've worked in many cities, including this city and many other jurisdictions. I've served on boards with cities. And that is not a process that is typically followed. So I do want to express some concern over that. Like I said, beyond the many concerns we have due to just nuisance, we are concerned about health, and that's our big issue today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Cliff, a couple of objections come up. One, she mentioned fencing. Are we complying with any and all surrounding peripheral?
Yes, there was discussion about that as part of the entry corridor and site plan discussion, that there would be some fencing placed on the property to separate and buffer the incompatible uses from the new commercial operation to the residential use. So yes, fencing was discussed and a condition presented to staff as part of the approval.
So there's no issue there?
No issue there.
Is there any issue with the fact the gentleman, Bradley, just mentioned that they were late submitting a revised drawing?
No. He is correct that the original plan showed the pumps to the front of the structure. They were relocated to the side. We did talk about this as part of an entry corridor and site plan approval process. Technically, per our current ordinance, this is not required to go through a site plan process. It was just added because we were already there. In the C1 district, for example, if this was a permitted by right use, we do not go through the site plan process unless it is a minimum lot size of 19,000 square feet. Therefore, this doesn't meet those minimum requirements. And if this was a permitted by right use, this would come to staff for an administrative review and approval, and the P&Z would never see it. So it wasn't subject to any public comment from a site plan standpoint.
Okay. Barbara, do you have any comments or thoughts?
No.
I'm going to hit the speaker button.
No, I agree with what Cliff said.
Any further questions?
I have a question for anybody in this room. Does anybody know when the gas pumps went away?
So I moved in the house in 2015, and they were still in place, but they were not in use.
Okay.
So approximately 2016, 2017.
Anything else, gentlemen? I'll entertain a motion for item 7B.
I'll make a motion to approve with the recommendations of staff and the P&Z.
Second.
Motion to approve and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Item 7B carries. Thank you.
Seven A.
Moving to 7B, request Dev 2026-37-ZC by Grant Gold for the following, and we have a presentation by the applicant, staff, and then public hearing. Do we have the applicant? With that, we'll move to.
Yeah, I don't see the applicant present, but as indicated in your staff memo, this was a request to rezone the property from R1 single family residential to a C1 neighborhood commercial underlying zoning district. And it's for the property at 207 East Mulberry. As always, when staff took this before the Planning and Zoning Commission, we identified the background of the property and the current permitted by right uses and conditional uses within the current underlying R1 zoning district, and then also presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission what would be allowed by right and via the conditional use permit if rezoned to a C1 underlying zoning district. We also did identify the appropriate place types that are identified in your 2024 comprehensive plan. And although the comprehensive plan does identify a neighborhood commercial underlying zoning district as an appropriate zoning district per that place type, we did also encourage the P&Z to consider the other factors such as traffic, surrounding properties, and so forth in their findings of fact. And in the review, the applicant and the testimony, the applicant indicated that they were looking to rezone this to accommodate a proposed STR unoccupied. Staff reminded the Planning and Zoning Commission, even if that was their intent, if it was rezoned to a C1 district, there were several things that could come in if the applicant decided to bring them in or sell the property. So we reinforced them to take that into account. So based upon that, when the Planning and Zoning Commission heard the testimony, they did make a recommendation to deny the request by a 9-0 vote based on the findings of fact that the subject property only makes up a small parcel of property in the neighborhood. There would be no specific public benefit or interest presented to the community or presented by the applicant. The potential future use of C1 zoning could have a negative impact on the surrounding neighborhood area because there are some single family residences there, and that there could be a multitude of uses that would ultimately be allowed if rezoned to C1. And although it wasn't completely inconsistent with the comprehensive plan, they felt that it was against the guiding principles that would not respect and enhance livability in the vicinity. So a majority of the findings of fact they found were in would be detrimental to the neighborhood, and therefore they made that recommendation for denial. To uphold that recommendation, take action on it, you as a council, you have to have a majority vote. If you were to overturn this recommendation and vote to rezone the property, it would require a supermajority, which obviously may be an issue here right now. But therefore, that was the recommendation of the P&Z to deny the request.
Okay. Barbara, any comments?
You would need a supermajority to overturn it. That's correct.
Okay, so I'll entertain a motion for item 7B. Oh, excuse me, you're right. Public hearing. We do have one submittal for a speaker card for Mr. Brian Weiss. Mr. Brian Weiss, are you here? We do not. Okay, that's the only item I have requesting to speak, so I'll close public hearing and then take action. So I'll entertain a motion.
Sorry. Motion to deny request development 2026-37-ZC.
Second.
Motion to deny and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 7B is denied. Moving to item 7C, consider approval ordinance 2026-28 to decrease the speed limit from 40 to 35 miles an hour on RM 965 North Milam Street. So do you have any comments on that, Cliff? Or
that's Evan? Actually, I think it's going to be Sybil on this.
Sybil, thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Before y'all this morning, I have for your consideration an ordinance that would decrease the speed limit along North Milam Street from Main Street to West Mulberry Street from 40 miles per hour to 35 miles per hour. And basically what this is today, the ordinance is basically a formality that needs to be passed in order to, or in order for TxDOT to actually change the speed limit signs and for the speed limit to be legally enforceable by our police department. And it also establishes the offense of speeding. So this ordinance is a result of a traffic study that was performed by TxDOT in July of 2025. And they essentially studied the North Milam corridor in sections that coincided with the different speed zones. And the zone from West Main Street to West Mulberry Street, had an 85th percentile speed that was lower than the posted speed. And basically, the 85th percentile speed is a metric that's used in transportation engineering that is used along with other factors to evaluate speed limits. So because that measured speed was lower than the posted speed, that warrants the speed limit decrease. If you'll have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
So this is really a function of us approving a TxDOT request. So okay,
that's correct. Yes. Okay.
Thank you. So, entertain a motion for item 7C.
I'll make a motion to approve ordinance 2026-28 as presented.
Second.
Approved. First and second. Item 7C. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. 7C. Thank you. Moving on to item 8A, consider and discuss recommendations of Gillespie County Central Appraisal District related to the retention of joint delinquent tax collection firms in all taxing entities. So Scott, you've already spoken, you're still with us, I see. Is there any other comments or discussions on this? Or is council ready to take a motion?
I do not. Mm-hmm. You have any comments?
Mm-mm. Okay, so the question is between the two taxing entities, do either of you have a preference or?
I make a motion to approve Limebarger and Associates.
Motion to approve Limebarger. Motion fails. Do I have a second? Motion.
Motion to approve per due for tax collection.
Second.
Motion to approve and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion 8A is approved for Purdue.
I vote no.
Bobby Watson voted no. Okay, thank you. Moving to item 8B, consider approval of street closures requested for two Warehouse Row Makers Market event on South Lincoln Street from the north side of Barron's Creek to San Antonio Street beginning 6 a.m. Saturday, November 21st and November 22nd, 2026. So, Ms. Jill Elliott.
Good morning. Jill Elliott, Josh Allen, and Kelly Credo with the Chamber of Commerce. And we are here. We had a really successful first market in May. Many of you joined us that day. We estimate around 4,000 probably people that came through and shopped. And we're asking for dates for the second one, November 21st and 22nd. We're asking for a two-day event with an overnight Saturday closure. There are really only four businesses on Lincoln Street that would be affected, and they're the ones that are contributing and sponsoring the Makers Market. So as far as an overnight closure, there's lots of ways to get around Lincoln Street. It's such a short block. We feel like it would be an easy place to block off again at the bridge where we did Creek Street, and then our ask is to go all the way down to Shedders, the corner stop sign at San Antonio and Lincoln Street, and that allows us more space for vendors, better easement with Steve Ulfers, and just we learned a lot for this last time as far as like spatially planning everything. So we're asking for an overnight Saturday closure to allow us a bigger and better market. It was super successful. There were a lot of people in town that didn't have an opportunity to come because we ended up closing at 5 o'clock. If we can scoot that hour later into Saturday with a Sunday event as well, I think we'll really garner a lot more shoppers and excitement and entertainment in town. We are weighing the one-day closure versus a two-day closure with the overnight. Just financially right now, we're asking for a two-day event, but there's a lot of moving parts. I think as soon as we have an answer, we're ready to push the button and start inviting our vendors back that were participants, and they're eager and willing to like jump on board again. So we've got great feedback from all the people who are participants and that want to join us again. It allows us more time also to recruit around 20 more vendors. We had 60 vendors at the last event. We're looking for 75-ish, so another 15 or so on top of that. It gives us more space and opportunity to create a bigger and better event overall. Okay. So,
any comments?
Yeah, I would just say that the two-night thing also will allow our vendors to, like, stay overnight. Because we do have some people that come from – we have a lot of local vendors, but we do have some that come from different hill country communities that would probably stay overnight. This last time we did set up a hotel block in on Barron's Creek because it's just right there close to the market. We had, I think, one stay, but it was a one-night thing. So a lot of them came in, packed up, and went back. So I think that would increase our overnight visitation from the vendors coming. We've met with the engineering department about having a third-party traffic control company come in and do the traffic control this time. And that would be about a $5,000 expense that we've figured out how to budget that in. We'd also budget in overnight security. We would increase the amount of security and then have security trucks parked at each of the entrances that come into the corridor that we have blocked off. So, but happy to answer any questions that y'all have about glass market or what we're thinking for this new one.
I don't have anything to add.
Questions, comments?
I attended the first market and it seemed very successful. Lots of people. Talked to most of the vendors, and they were all very excited with the event. So I'm looking forward to this next one.
And I think y'all all got the little packet that we sent out. That's a post-event report, and we had 100% of the vendors that filled out our vendor participation survey said that they would come back to another. And we've had people like every week reaching out, like, when's the next date? So we know that the vendors are excited. I think pretty much 90% of them had like great sales that said that their sales were great. And we had some people that sold out. I think we had, and we had a lot of local vendors, Fredericksburg Cast Iron. These guys are local. We want to expand the like food court set up too, so that there's more food opportunities, more music, and make it more of a community event, and that's something that people will continue to come to.
Garrett, do you have any comments?
I'm in favor of this event. In general, I hate street closures.
He's our shy council member.
You're going to wish I waited a little longer to come in. But my only suggestion would be we can try it for the November time period. I'm not really in favor of the 27 time period right now. I'd like to see how November works. It's a Saturday night closing. We don't really know how that's going to work, but I'm in favor of the event. And so my preference would be to try it in November, then get a report and see how everything turned out. But long term, I think we need to have a discussion about street closures in general. This is a for-profit event. There's the event on Market Square that take place all the time. I think it warrants, and now there's a request for barricades. So if there's a request for barricades, are there going to be requests for employees in the future? I think long term we have to talk about how many street closures we want and what type, maybe come up with general rules, but that's for another day.
Quick thing on that is that we did use the
city to do the street closure for us on the previous one, but we'll be using an outside third party to do the street closure and paying for that from the funds that we get from sponsorships and vendor participation for future ones, so that the city would not need to staff or provide barricades for it.
I would also say this is not a for-profit event. This is a community event that we are wanting to host on Warehouse Row. As far as, yes, it's for exposure to Lincoln Street and for the shops that are there. We didn't gain a lot of like revenue that day, but what we did gain was exposure and a really lovely community event that brought in a lot of people. There's no profit to be had at the end of this. And if there is profit, that Josh and I always wanted to donate it back to like an arts program or something in town. If we get to that point where we have some revenue left over at the end of the year, we want to put it back into the community. It's not going to us shopkeepers on Lincoln Street. It's meant to be a community event. We feel like it's something that's been missing in town as far as like collaborating with these creative cottage industries and allowing them an opportunity to sell their small made products. And that's really what a maker's market is. So there's really no revenue to be had at the end.
We had about $2,000 left over from the first market, and we held on to that to use for the next one because we're anticipating more expenses with the street closure and additional security and things like that. Looking at getting some more porta potties and all of that type stuff. But like Jill said, the thought was in the future, if there is any money left over, that it would get donated to something. Yeah. Sure.
Well, I definitely like the idea as well. I want to do everything I can to support small businesses in our community. So I like the idea. I do understand what Gary is saying here. But Garrett, did you have any comments?
Yes. So in response to Councilmember Neffendorf, we are looking at a fee structure for road closures, not just for events, but also to try to incentivize contractors to minimize the amount of time they have lanes shut down. Currently, we're dealing with Atmos in the downtown area. So anything we can do to incentivize them to complete the project and move on to their next project, we'd like to do that because there is a cost to the city for these closures. So that's something we'll bring before y'all, hopefully in the next several weeks or months.
Okay. With that, any further comments, questions? So we can take two approaches here. And Jill, I can't speak for council. I don't know how they're going to vote yet. But hypothetically, if they did vote to approve the first one, pending results, approving the second one, are you comfortable with that?
Yeah, I think we're fine with that.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess the motion would be to approve it as written. Or amended to approve the first session.
Mm-hmm.
I'll entertain a motion, please.
I make a motion to approve the street closure from 6 a.m. Saturday, November 21st, 2026, until 6 p.m. Sunday, November 22nd, 2026.
Second.
First and second to amend 8B to include the first date of November 21st, 2022. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Item 8B is approved as amended. Thank you very much, and I look forward to attending.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, moving to item 8C, consider and take action on appeal of the Director of Development Services denial of an STR unoccupied permit for 610 West Travis. Ashley, are you here? Okay, come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, we are here just to appeal our STR permit.
Oops, sorry.
Sorry.
Okay. Operator error on my side. You have three minutes, but no.
Okay, no, thank you.
Thank you. We have copies of these notes if you guys would like to see them with the time sequence. So Ashley and I have been, became recent permanent residents of Fredericksburg, have owned properties here in town since 2009. This STR has been an integral part of our family at 610 West Travis. We built the property with the intention, and since the inception of the property, Ashley's mother and her husband have lived on the property in an accessory unit. In order to help pay for this property and allow Ashley's mother and husband to live there, we decided to set up an STR. Through a series of events that you guys are familiar with the institution of the Granicus technology, we had difficulties renewing our permit in around the April 2023 timeframe, at which time Jan Musgrave renewed our permit for a very short period of time, 3 months, which we were not completely, we didn't understand that she was only renewing it for 3 months versus a full calendar year. So it threw off the sequence of the renewal permit. Subsequently, and we accept responsibility for our oversight in not renewing the permit in the calendar year of 2024. Fast forward to 2026, April timeframe of this year, we've been operating the STR unbeknownst to us. Without a conforming permit, when we applied for a new permit on a separate unaffiliated property, we found out that the permit was void. We immediately conformed with removing all of the current rentals. We've been current on our hotel and occupancy tax since the inception of the STR. And we're just asking that we have the opportunity to reinstate this STR permit. There are 10 other STRs within close proximity of ours. We have those exact locations if you guys would like to have that detail. But subsequently, we're just asking that our STR permit be reinstated. Ashley's mother is a property owner living on the property. From the inception, the property was issued with an STR non-conforming permit, which we believe was not the correct type of permit. We didn't fully understand that when it was issued. If the permit would have been issued as an STR occupied.
Go ahead and finish your comment, please.
We believe if the STR accessory permit would have been issued from the inception, through this time sequence, we would have been able to renew our permit at this current moment in time, even though we missed the renewal because of the rules and regulations associated with an STR accessory versus the STR
unoccupied.
Okay. I got it. I always, in full transparency, acknowledge I own an ADU, so I operate within the confines of our permitting process. Do you all live here?
We do.
So have you moved here recently?
Yes.
Within the last year and a half.
In the last year and a half. So in the past, I've lost track of time, Bobby, 3 years, 4 years, this has been a very contentious conversation in our community for a number of reasons. And I lived through Granicus. I lived through STR, or the other product, I forget the name of it now, MGO. So I use them, so I'm very familiar with them. I think the council previous to this council has been very consistent in enforcing the ordinance. So the one thing I try to put out there is if you didn't live here, working with a management property management company that knows all of the history the city has gone through, because it's been a lot of information. So I'll just put that out there. I don't know the council's thoughts on this at this point in time, but if anybody's listening, work with somebody local on this to avoid these types of issues. So that having been said, thank you very much, and I'll ask for any comments here from council.
Cliff,
do you have any comments?
No, just to touch on what the applicant had talked about, this would be a reestablishment. They're seeking for a STR unoccupied as a legal non-conforming use in the R1 district. I think what he touched on was that there is the guest house or the accessory dwelling unit to the rear, which if they resided in the primary residence would be permitted by right. But I think the unique circumstances here are that the permanent residence, your mother, yes, resides in the accessory dwelling unit, and you're seeking this for the primary structure.
Correct.
As an STR unoccupied.
Correct.
So, Barbara, you may not be fully up to speed on our ordinance yet at this point. Does that, the fact that their mother lives in the back, does that create any special circumstance around nonconforming?
No, it's an, she's in the accessory building, so
okay,
it,
if it
doesn't.
If it switched, it'd be different.
Right.
Okay, thank you all. I'll entertain a motion for item 8C.
Motion to deny the appeal for the STR unoccupied permit at 610 West Travis.
Motion to deny.
Second.
And second, all in favor of denial?
Aye.
All in favor, or all opposing?
Opposed. Aye.
Aye. So we are deadlocked on that.
Are you opposed?
I oppose.
Oh, okay.
So, Barbara, can you give me some direction here? We're split. Do we have to table that until we have a full?
So, staff's obligation is to bring it to you. It's been brought to you in accordance to the code. I mean, unless Barbara has any issues, if you want to wait for a quorum or an odd number, so to speak, you
also,
could table.
Procedurally speaking, if we're deadlocked, doesn't the motion fail?
It fails.
Yes.
It does fail.
So there's really nothing else.
Okay, so,
sorry.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Thank you. And I did drive by it this morning, but based on procedure, the motion did fail, so the denial does stand. So thank you.
Okay.
Item 8D, there is, I don't believe there's formal action here, but discuss potential motion directing staff to prepare and present text amendments to Planning and Zoning Commission for Appendix B zoning ordinance relating to permitting and conditional use permits within the Central Business District. Cliff.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. So as you're aware, during our monthly Planning and Zoning Commission meetings, we have directors' reports and staff updates and some general updates for the P&Z. And one of the things that's come up as part of the potential UDC process, and quite honestly, as we are continuing to be very aggressive in text amendments to bring our code up to date, one of the questions that's come up continuously is how do we regulate uses that are permitted by right within the Central Business District? And one of the discussions that's come out of this is
Do we look at the potential of requiring a conditional use permit with some supplementary regulations for prospective businesses within that underlying zoning district? It's brought to you today with three potential actions. I did put in here for a potential motion because for staff to really dig into this and start to present some formal text amendments, there either has to be a motion by the City Council or a motion by the Planning and Zoning Commission directing staff to begin to prepare an ordinance for those amendments. So where I'm going with that is I brought it to you today for the general discussion. We have three potential options. You could make a motion telling staff to move forward with some sort of formal text amendments to present to the Planning and Zoning Commission. You could direct staff to take it to the Planning and Zoning Commission for their motion to move forward, or you could quite honestly say that we want to wait and evaluate this as part of the overall UDC process. I think the concern is with the UDC process is that it's going to take us 18 to 24 months to complete that. And if there are concerns and uses, we probably need to address those sooner and later because it doesn't do any good to fix the door after the horses get out, so to speak. So they want us to really look at this. So another option is to have a joint meeting with the Planning and Zoning Commission to have some formal discussion and how to move forward. But I think there's several factors that we want to look at in terms of the use itself. And then how do we define what uses are required to go under that process? How do we address legal non-conforming uses that could be created as part of any text amendment, and what the role in staff is to administratively approve them? Because we've said it, we've got the zoning ordinance in place. That's the purpose of the zoning ordinance. We just want to have the best playbook, so to speak, as we move forward in addressing it. So be happy to answer any questions that you have at this point.
Council. Cliff, I think I'd be in favor of a joint meeting with the P&Z to discuss this before we took any action.
I think it's a good time to do that as well, because maybe we set that up because now that we're in the weeds of the UDC, there may be some other discussion items. So I think maybe if we just set something up that now haven't had one in a while, probably a good time to do that.
Gary, Todd.
Also, yeah. To note, one thing with the UDC, on the Technical Advisory Committee, two of you will be on that, two P&Z members will be on that. I think it's an opportunity to kind of get you guys talking there as well.
Yeah, I would agree with Councilman Watson. Because this came from Planning and Zoning, I absolutely want them to be a part of it. Some of these folks helped write the No Chains on Main, so there's some historic baseline knowledge there. So I would ask that we, Council, make the motion to direct staff to engage and set up a joint meeting between Planning and Zoning and City Council to discuss this further before taking action. So I'll entertain a motion for item 8D.
I make a motion to direct staff to set up a joint meeting with the Planning and Zoning Commission and the City Council.
Second.
First and second, all in favor, item 8D, to set up a meeting with joint with Planning and Zoning.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 8D is approved. Thank you. Next on the item is 9A. We had the Native Plant Society, which is not prepared to speak this morning, so they will not be here. I guess we're going to hold that until next council session. So, Mr. Tim Blimberg, item 9B, quarterly economic development update.
Good morning, Mayor, Council, City Staff. This is my quarterly report out to you all. Like I've told you in the past, I'll hit whatever's kind of fresh numbers-wise. We'll hit some of the quarterly stuff. This morning I've got some slides dedicated to sales tax, and then since my last presentation, we got some numbers on jobs numbers for 2025. So there's a couple of slides on that. And then I'll probably next quarter, I'll kind of drill down into some what's in the development pipeline. But anyway, we've got some stuff to cover this morning. And I'm supposed to swap. Okay. And they said to be gentle. There we go. All right. This is where we are on sales tax. These are numbers that came out last week, maybe. It's the July report. It's May sales tax. So we're now 7 months into the sales tax reporting year. And it was a good month for the city. The city was up 9.21%. County was up 8.87%. So we're now 7 months into the reporting year. And the city's up 3.38%, county's up 3.26%. Next slide is my peer group comparison. It cities on the left, counties are on the right. You have a percent change for the month, and you have a year-to-date change for each. All the numbers that are shaded in yellow or a little bit worse than ours. So judging by the amount of yellow on that page, pretty darn good month for both the city and the county, you know, both in terms for the city, particularly on a year-to-date basis, as well as for, you know, the May collection month.
What's going on in New Braunfels?
I don't know. I went back and looked. Last month, it's been running this way all year. Went back and looked at the payment detail report, and it looked like they picked up a lot of tax revenue that was prior period collections. So, but that can't explain all of it. But yeah, crazy numbers. When you're up 90% in the county year to date. Right. So right. I don't think that's all just growth. I think there's something else going on there. Okay. Any other questions about that? Mm-mm.
Thank you.
Here's a look at the latest 12 months. Again, cities on the left, counties on the right. It shows you the reporting month and the actual month going back 12 months. And, you know, over that period of time, you know, for the city, the average is up 1.79%. The last, you know, 4 months have made a world of difference in where we are on sales tax. But, I mean, there was some discussion at last Tuesday's budget meeting. I think Clinton reported accurately that inflation was at Tuesday it was 4.2%, and then later Tuesday they announced the June number, 4.2% having been May. The June number was 3.5%, so it hadn't gone away. I went back and looked at the 6 months, year-to-date, calendar months, and that average is 3.3%. So I guess my point here is, you know, while 1.79% is a good number, you know, it's less than, you know, about half of what, you know, inflation is over a period of time. This slide shows you what sales tax looks like for the fiscal year. And we're 10 months into the fiscal year. And so compared to the first 10 months of the 2025 fiscal year, the city's up 1.64%. Like I said, and like it was shown on the previous slide, the last 4 months have made a world of difference. You know, 4 months ago, that would have been 6 months into the fiscal year, the city was actually down 2.24% versus fiscal 2025, and we've made up almost 4% a gain in the last 4 months to be at 1.64%. So we've got 2 months left in the fiscal year. All right, we're going to shift now to most of my quarterly economic indicators. Building permits continue to be amazing. The way to read this report is the top left-hand two columns are for the second quarter, and these are calendar quarters. The right two columns are year-to-date, and that would be year-to-date through the first 6 months in this case of the year. So residential building permits for the quarter, there were 244. Year-to-date, we're at 399. Commercial, you're at 66 for the quarter, 131 for the first half of the year. Significant percentage increases. I went back and looked, and 2024 was actually a record for building permits in the city. And through the first, for the year, there were 719 building permits issued in 2024. So not quite on pace to eclipse that record, but we're having a very, very good year so far. These are reports that generally are more indicative of what's maybe going on out in the county. You've got county septic permits is the top number, down a little bit for the quarter, up a little bit year to date. Well permits is in the middle, issued by the Hill Country Underground Water Conservation District, up fairly sharply for the quarter, from it's 71 versus 41 last year. And then year to date, we're at 110 versus 71. So a little over a 50% increase there. And then the bottom numbers are new meter installations by CTEC. And a lot of that general residential now is in the city of Fredericksburg, but it also kind of indicates what's going on in certainly in their service territory. They're up a little bit for the quarter and up about 25% year to date. Real estate sales. The top portion of this is number of transactions. And these are sales that close. These are all Gillespie County sales that close in our MLS, divided into residential, land, and then commercial. The top part of the chart are transactions. The bottom part of the chart are dollar value. So, and you can kind of see residential's up a little bit, land is down a little bit, and then commercial's all over the place, which is going to happen. You don't have enough sales really from period to period, to have a general trend in commercial. But, so it looks it looks promising. It's up a little bit. The dollar value of real estate transactions is up 5% for the quarter, 18% for the year. But putting in perspective, number of transactions year to date is 228. In the first half of 2021, there are 467 transactions. So it's half of what the number was in the record year of 2021. And then the dollar value is also off, not off by half, but off significantly from 2021. In the first half of that year, there were $254 million in sales and versus $186 million in sales so far this year. Now, in real estate, it seems like we build a little bit of momentum and then we give it back. And we start to build a little bit of momentum and then we give it back. And I think there's just a lot going on in the economy that's causing that to happen. These are numbers that I get from Mike Starks, who is the EDC liaison from the Board of Realtors. Mike publishes these on his webpage. I use this a lot because it's just a really comprehensive history of average home prices in the city of Fredericksburg. These are homes that sold in the city that closed through our MLS. So it's not everything, but it's a pretty good representation of what the market's done from period to period. Over the last several years, Mike has taken to separating out STRs from residences. I take those numbers and I put them back together because historically through about 2022, that's the way they were. And so I put them back together to be consistent. And to me, a house is a house is a house. But you can see through the first half of 26, the average home sale price in the city was $544,409. And that's the lowest average it's been since 2020. This is only one of my numbers that is actually a first quarter number, and these are lodging receipts. And that's because they lag everything else in terms of timing when I accumulate these numbers from the comptroller's office. So for the first quarter of this year versus the first quarter of 25, gross lodging revenues, and that's not hot receipts, that's gross receipts, hotel, motel, B&B, on a countywide basis, we were up 3%. Visitor center attendance, maybe like I've said in the past, maybe it doesn't mean as much as it used to, but the folks are diligently continuing to count people as they come into the visitor center, and it does represent activity. So for the quarter, they were up about 2%. For the year, we're up about 6%. This is a kind of report y'all have never seen before because I've never done it before, but Lisa at the CVB asked me if there was a way to figure out, she wanted to figure out who the top, say, she was asking for HOT, but the top taxpayers were in terms of collecting hotel occupancy tax. And I said, I can get pretty close to doing that. And so what I did was I went and got my revenue numbers from the comptroller's office, which are broken out by taxpayer. And, you know, in two columns, there's the left-hand column is gross revenues. The right-hand column is taxable revenues. And so this is a full year, but it's not a calendar year. It goes from Q3 of 25 through Q1 of 26. So it's four quarters, the four most recent quarters that I have access to. So you can see who the bigger numbers belong to. The first three on the list are all, well, the first two are Airbnb collections. The third one is also a vacation rental, a local vacation rental collection. And then we get to a couple of hotels, and then you can kind of see that list. And I included everything that was greater than $1 million over that year in gross revenues. So it's kind of interesting. You know, if you wanted to apply how much is hot, you just, you know, do the math. But these are gross revenues by taxpayer countywide over that period of time.
Q3 to Q1 doesn't seem like a whole year.
Well, then I didn't do that, didn't display that accurately. Let me see, it would be
Q2 to Q1.
Correct.
Or 3 to 2.
The last quarter I have is the first quarter. So Q1 is right. So it would be.
Anyway, it's a year.
2, 3, 4, and 1. All right. Thank you. I was looking at that too, and I thought that didn't look right, but I'm not going to mention it. So it was quarters Q2, 3, and 4 of 25, and then Q1 of 26. I promise you it's a year. So, this is a slide that got updated. Some numbers came in late Friday. It's a slide that changed. I think y'all may have gotten the slide deck Friday afternoon, and I revised it yesterday morning. Occupancy, average daily rate, and revenue per available room for the first half of the year, coming from Smith, what used to be Smith Travel Research. So you can see we're basically trading average daily rate for occupancy. Occupancy is up a tick, average daily rate's up, you know, a healthy amount, and then revenue per available room is just the math behind those two, the first two numbers. You know, this is not the entire lodging market. I think the census is 41 properties accounting for about 1,600 rooms. By my count, countywide at year-end, 2025, we had right at 4,000 rooms. So this is about 1,600 of that 4,000 rooms. But it does represent your bigger properties, most of your hotels. So it's, I think, a pretty good indicator of which direction the markets are moving and what rates are doing.
Hey, Tim, I'm not real clear on the revenue per available room. Is that spending they do while they're on property? What is
No, it? No. It's taking the average daily rate and multiplying it times occupancy.
Okay.
All right, now we're going to get into some jobs numbers. Jobs numbers come out, and they lag all the other sales tax and other numbers by about 6 months. So I got the fourth quarter of 2025, probably 45 days ago or so, and kind of built this report. And it changes every month. So you're looking at the 3 months of the last quarter, and then the bottom line there is the number of jobs. And these are jobs in Gillespie County. So, you know, we're averaging about 340 new jobs per year over that five-year period. But as you can see over, just look at the December column, for instance, growth has not been evenly distributed at all from year to year. I mean, you know, the change, I think, between 20 and 21 was about 692 jobs, and it fell to 380 jobs, and it was 396 jobs, and it was 142 jobs. And then last year, you know, it was an 85 jobs. So the growth is slowing, but it's, you know, the average number is still pretty healthy. Like I said, it's averaging 340 jobs a year, roughly. And there's seasonality in these jobs numbers. That's why I just look at the same quarter versus the same quarter in prior years to kind of account for that seasonality. This is a really busy slide. I apologize for that, but there's a lot of data there you can look at your leisure. It looks, and these are fourth quarter average numbers going back 2020 through 2025. Looking at Gillespie County and then some of our contiguous and area counties, and then the far right column is statewide numbers. And then I have a five-year change from 2020 to 2025. I've got a three-year change from 22 to 25, and then I've got last year's change, which is just, you know, 24 to 25. And you can kind of see how we compare on a percentage basis to some of these other counties. And, you know, we're not all that far off from anybody. Everybody is slowing down. I mean, the real outlier there looks to be Kerr County and the number of jobs that they added last year. Now, I went back and checked that. I was surprised by that number. So I went back and kind of drilled down into it a little deeper, and over half of that number were actually job increases in hospitals over there. Of course, they have three hospitals over there. I don't know which hospital those are at, but anyway, I did verify that number. I was initially assuming a lot of those in Kerrville, a lot of those job creation numbers last year were construction related due to the build back from the last year's flooding, and about a quarter of them were, but I was a little surprised over half of them were medical related. You know, maybe I'm old school, but I continue to look at unemployment rates. I kind of feel like it's still a general indicator of economic well-being. You know, not only what's going on in the labor market, but just kind of general economic output and in broader trends like, you know, inflation and consumer spending. Don't focus a lot on what the number is. I try to focus more on which way are they trending, and you can kind of, you know, get an indication, presumably, is the economy slowing, businesses downsizing, or are they adding employees? So this is Gillespie and our contiguous counties, and then the average of that set of eight, and then the statewide number. for, and I got these numbers yesterday. So yesterday for June, and then 6 months prior to June, which would be December, and then June of 2025. So there was, if you'd looked at the numbers that y'all got Friday, were May numbers, and the unemployment rate in Gillespie County in May was 3.1%. So everybody jumped basically 0.6% from May to June. And these are preliminary numbers. We'll see what the government actually dials them in at. But, you know, I think the bottom line is, you know, we seem to gather, you know, try to gain a little bit of momentum, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's a lot of this is having to do with the, you know, Iraq conflict, and you know, which, you know, started on February 28th. So you can kind of see where we were on unemployment in December of 25 and what's happened since then. So like I've told you before, everybody moves every month, and we all move together. And we will always be, or have always been, the lowest unemployment rate of our contiguous counties and the statewide numbers. So, it's gotten to be more work than it used to be to generate this next report. And this is a list of a summary of winery G permit counts over time. Over the period of time back to 2015 that I've been collecting these numbers. And so I'd last collected these numbers from the TABC at year end 25. And so I did it mid-year as of June 30th. And so during that first six months of this year, we've added six and deleted one. So we had a net gain of five total G permits. And then you've got the duplicate number with all the wineries that have more than one G permit. And then the unique number is the delta between those two. But the other number that I continue to pay attention to, maybe I'm a little bit disturbed about, but is the number of the growth within the city limits. So in the last 18 months, that would have been from December 31st of 24 to June 30th of 26. We've added 10 additional winery tasting rooms in the city, not downtown necessarily, but within the city limits. So that's the number that I break out. I break out there. Got these numbers, I think, last week or earlier this week from the chamber. It continues to, on a quarterly basis, update the apartment numbers, which I greatly appreciate. So, you know, this shows the trend of units and vacant units, off-market units, overall occupancy, and then adjusted occupancy, which takes into account the units that are off the market and aren't really for rent, going back, about 5 years. And, you know, we continue, I mean, it hadn't stalled out yet. We've added another percentage increase, basically, in the last quarter. So we're up to about 94-95% occupancy, depending on which number you look at, which compared to other markets, particularly our major metropolitan areas in the state, this is outstanding. And I think most of your big cities are somewhere in the low to mid 80s occupancy. So we're performing really well by comparison.
Tim, do you have any comment about the potential of the new apartments that are coming online? Do you think those will fill up at the same rate as the last two that came online?
That's a really good question. And that's something that I'm probably going to put together some numbers for y'all for my next quarterly presentation, like I mentioned, of what's in that pipeline. And, you know, we've got two projects that I keep saying that are going to break ground imminently, you know, I think. Very likely, you know, we're kind of running out of year, but I'm still optimistic that both will probably break ground by the end of the year. So it's just two projects, but it totals 535 units. So it's a bunch of apartments. And that's what everybody's concerned about. I field a lot of inquiries and share this data and other data, other housing data with potential apartment developers. And that's the question that we continue to ask ourselves is, you know, how deep is this demand for additional housing, both single family and multifamily? You know, I think to answer your question, Bobby, I think we can absorb a couple of more apartments. I don't know. I hate to see us, you know, start construction of five.
Yeah.
But starting to ask my same question about single family. I think D.R. Horton's basically run out of inventory. They've got some lot development going on. Lennar is going to, you know, continue to build. They're going to continue to build until they run out of lots. But just over the last month or 6 weeks, I've probably, and Cliff's seeing these too, most of them have come to DRC. We've had four different subdivisions, and I added it up yesterday, totaling about 285 lots that are in various stages of planning. Now, still under contract, they're still doing their due diligence, but, they're replenishing the pipeline, I guess is one way to put it.
Back in 2024, we were asking the same question.
We were.
And
I think we've all been surprised,
yeah.
By this absorption. It doesn't seem to have stalled out. And, you know, even if it stalls out at 95%, that's still a darn healthy number. But it hadn't done that yet. So
do we see any compression because of the competition pricing rental?
Yes. I've said that all along. None of this stuff is as affordable as I'd like to see. But I've questioned a lot of apartment developers independently, you know, about why they can't get to a better number. And the answer is always we can't get to a lower rent number without some sort of subsidization, you know. And so so that's my thinking is the only thing I can try to control is to overbuild the apartment market to compress these rents. And I think that's happening. I think, you know, that additional inventory of housing is simply keeping all the existing apartments' rents in check because it's competitive. And so I think we're seeing some benefit from that. Other questions? That was the end of my presentation. If you have questions about anything there or anything else, happy
to. Tim, very comprehensive. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Mr. Sean, our communication director. We added an update on the rain, the flood, and the recovery. So Sean's been amazing getting out in front of everyone. So
good afternoon now. No, still good morning, Mayor, Council. The important people are out still working on this event, so you get to hear from me today. But IT department's dialing up a PowerPoint presentation just to catch you up on where we are and where we've been. So I got to give credit to our emergency management coordinator, Ashley Moore. She activated our EOC on Tuesday, and that has been in operation throughout this event. There's a picture of what that looked like on Thursday there. It's a chaotic scene, but a lot of coordination going into it. Obviously, this event produced significant flooding, impacted roads, bridges, infrastructure, and private property. She mentioned last night on an update call a lot of private roads destroyed in this, and that's a tough thing to figure out because those state and federal funds don't really extend to that private area. Our first responders did a tremendous job at the height of this on Thursday morning. We had more than 30 rescues, six of those air evacs. It was a stressful situation on Thursday morning when I got to the emergency operations center about 6:45 as the Pernalis River was rising. But that last bullet point is the only thing that really matters. No reported fatalities or injuries here in Gillespie County. Just some pictures. Our police department was huge in getting out, blocking off roads along with our street department crews. That picture on the right from Highway 87 South, and then on the left, Gaiman Lane there, as the water was up and then some of the damage left. This morning, engineers are out assessing this damage, trying to determine the full cost of this. So some of the work that Ashley has put in, and along with a ton of staff, public information and warning messaging, that's a look at what people who are signed up for our emergency alert system received on Thursday morning when the Pertinalis was really rising. I mentioned the police department, the sheriff's office, our street department getting out, closing roads, barricading those low water crossings so people wouldn't enter those. And then the coordinated effort. I mentioned this a couple times, our emergency operations center located right next to our dispatch center. So as soon as a call came in to 911, that call was walked immediately into the emergency operations center. Chief Bizzle there directing our first responders to get out and get these people to safety. That we did open a shelter for a short time. We had a couple people who utilized that, thanks to the Fredericksburg United Methodist Church for opening their doors. They do a great job hosting us along with the Red Cross. And then that interagency coordination through the EOC. So police department, sheriff's office, TxDOT on the scene. This was a meeting trying to reopen Highway 16 between all the people that needed to be involved. So TxDOT has made some temporary repairs to get that road reopened. There's going to have to be some more permanent repairs, and that goes for a lot of across the county. Road and bridge crews with the county have made those roads passable, allowed emergency operations to get in there, but there's going to have to be a lot of work done to make permanent repairs. After closures, obviously we were closed here at City Hall on Thursday. A lot of town shut down. Most operations have returned to normal now. The main infrastructure damage on Old San Antonio Road, that bridge is washed out, as well as today 783 was closed north of Harper as TxDOT crews made repairs there. As I mentioned, Ashley is out with our state partners assessing the damage on debris and roadways at this time. Resident reporting so critical. So the Texas Division of Emergency Management has a official damage assessment survey. If you have friends, if you have neighbors who have not filled this out and have damage on their property, scan that QR code, fill out this survey completely. This allows us to get a full picture, allows the state to get a full picture so we can get some of the funds flowing into our community. Also, if you have agricultural damage, fences, livestock, hay that were lost in the flood, AgriLife is working on some resources and future assistant programs, so please go ahead and fill out that survey with those damages as well. And then, as they did with the Kerrville floods last year, the Community Foundation has set up the Texas Hill Country Flood Relief Fund. Monetarily is probably the best way for individual residents to help people recover from this at this time. So you can scan that QR code, and that's set up to benefit the people that in the Texas Hill Country that were impacted by this flood. What's our next steps? I've mentioned a couple times the bridge engineering and evaluations are underway. That picture on the left is from Old San Antonio Road. I got to see it firsthand on Sunday and then yesterday evening, and it's quite something to behold, the power of that water. Precinct 2 and 3 have the most damage, so those crews have been out clearing roadways. And then the decision the county has to make whether they handle this debris in-house or hire a third-party contractor to do it, and they are still making that decision at this time. But that's kind of where we've been, where we are, and where we're going. Happy to answer any questions you guys may have. I'd be remiss if I didn't thank our first responders. I kind of mentioned a couple times, it's awesome to see them in action and to thank our residents. They heeded the warnings that Ashley put out early in the week to take precaution to get to higher ground. And then finally, thank you to you guys for your support, putting in the funds and the equipment that allow our first responders and our emergency management people to do their job. That's my report. If y'all have any questions, happy to answer those.
Mayor, I think it's better if we don't have questions and discussion on this item.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Sean, thank you. Thank you, Barbara. Item 10A, City Manager, Mr. Bailey.
Okay, Mayor, Council, City Council meetings coming up. First, August 4th. We have a construction manager at risk contract for the remodel of the public restrooms at the visitor center. Also, presentation of calculated truth and taxation tax rates. No action required on this item, just a requirement that that presentation be made by our finance department. A reappointment of our municipal court judge, Shelley Becker. We also have an interlocal agreement with FISD for our juvenile case manager program. And finally, introduction of a number of new municipal court employees that Shelley will be doing. Coming up August 18th, we'll have, and I guess you just left, an update from the chamber, their quarterly update from Jim McCoola. That's it for council meetings in August. Anything to add, comment on? We may have one other item on the 18th that we'll add pending right now. So I'll talk to you individually about that.
Okay.
Other meetings and events coming up. We have Citizen University, Cliff Cross Development Services will be presenting during that session. Cliff will follow that up at Coffee with the City Manager, talking about the Unified Development Code, the progress on that. So try to make that if you can. Mentioned the August 18th regular council meeting. We have a couple of special meetings coming up. The first, August 28th, special budget meeting in this room at 9 a.m. September 8th, another special meeting. That's the public hearing regarding the proposed budget and tax rate. And then finally, budget adoption on September 15th. Any questions?
Any questions or comments?
Comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we will recess for item 11A and B into executive session. looks like we are live. So it is 11:13. We are back in session having discussed executive items 11A and 11B. So that having been said, I'll entertain a motion for item 11A.
I make a motion to appoint the following people to the Zoning Board of Adjustment: Eric Hamerson, Adam Luton, Jennifer Eggleston, Mike Mahoney as regular members, and Jimmy Culp and Jim McAfee as alternate members.
Second.
Motion to approve and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Would y'all like to add the term limits as well?
Do you want to amend your motion?
Well, you already can make a separate motion.
Make a motion that the alternates, Jimmy Culp and Jim McAfee, serve for a term of 1 year.
Second.
First and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries as amended.
I make a motion to appoint Brad Bertrand to Historic Review Board.
Second.
Motion to approve and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
I make a motion to appoint the following people to Planning and Zoning: Daryl Whitworth, Jim Giroux, and Todd Peters.
Second.
Motion to approve and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Any further on boards and commissions? Okay. Item 11B had no action, so nothing further. Any additional business comments before we adjourn? It is 11:15 and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.